Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, going to be joined by our guy, Graham Hall, over at 247 Sports. I think you guys know at this point where to find Graham. You're probably following him for everything, whereas I know a lot of you are just following me or Fawcett for basketball, right? But at Graham Hall, you can follow him for all the sports. So hopefully you're reading some of my football writing and the stuff I did on that front. But anyway, you guys know where to find Graham at Graham Hall on X. Definitely worth your time to follow him. Does an incredible job covering all things Florida, but I think really does an excellent job covering the basketball team. So just singing my guy Graham Hall's praises as he joins us here in just a second. So Florida, obviously an incredible week for them. Two wins, two more wins, both quad one. Oklahoma, will it stay that way? I mean, the good news about a road win is as long as you're in the top 75 of the net, you're quad one. So Florida should have a chance for that to stay quad one. I think Vanderbilt will stay quad 1A, period. Even if this road trip for them goes poorly, they'd have to suffer some losses here for them to get out of that quad 1A category. It's actually Florida's first quad 1A win. What was interesting to me was like Miami lost at Clemson on Saturday, or it could have been a situation where Florida picked up two quad 1A wins on the same day, because Miami's teetering on the edge of getting into quad 1A for Florida, but they're not quite there. Anyway, the Gators have played 10 games in quadrant one. That is more than anyone in the country. Only Duke has played 9 games in quadrant one. Auburn had played 9, but then lost one. The point is all these things are super fluid. But I sent out a tweet. I don't remember when I sent it. I think I sent it Sunday. Florida's like, they're 15th in the net, but they're 9th in KenPom. They're 8th in Bart Torvik. They're 7th in Evan Mia. The committee uses KenPom and Torvik in the selection process now. So, like, you know, if things keep trending the way they are, not only could Florida get one of those top 16 protected seeds, but they could be looking towards that 2 or that 3 line. There's not much difference between a 2 and a 3 seed historically based on results. But things are looking up. We're going to talk to Graham Hall about what's gone right. And then we'll preview LSU, get Graham's thoughts on the Tigers, and then look ahead to Auburn. As always, all our game previews brought to you by our guys at Game Time Sidekicks. Go over to Game Time Sidekicks. You get free shipping on your orders. I think it's $50 or more. And they got everybody in the SEC, so we get a lot of these like float listeners that come in from other schools that want to hear our game previews on the pod. So LSU, Auburn, they got you too. LSU, what was your last natty? Baseball, maybe? I don't know if they have a baseball natty mug for LSU. They're like Yetis. And then Auburn, God, I don't even know when Auburn's last natty was, but they got some Final Four wear for you guys. I promise I'm not hating. Go over to Game Time Sidekicks. Check that stuff out. We get Graham Hall, the MC of the Gator Tip-Off Club, the man, the myth, the legend, 247 Sports guy extraordinaire, and also, like, I think asking poignant questions about Florida's assistants, at least one of whom, Carlin Hartman, should be a head coach and isn't, and somehow is still in Gainesville, coaching up guys like Ruben Chenulu, who just had maybe the best week for a Florida big man in a decade.
Yeah, I mean, Carlin's, you know this, every single offseason, teams call him and reach out to him about coaching opportunities, and there was a desire to stay in Gainesville this year as well, obviously have a chance to repeat as national champions, but coaching, you know, being around his son for his final year of high school basketball, Joseph Hartman is headed to Michigan. He's one of the top 100 players in this current class. Going to be in good hands with Dusty May. You and I were there after Florida beat Georgia a couple weeks ago, where we were all talking to Mike White after the game, and Mike went up to Joseph afterwards and just having a little casual conversation and said, "You're going to be in good hands. Dusty May's my guy." Obviously, Florida fans know that, you know, Dusty was in Gainesville for a while, then he went to FAU. And so a little interesting connection there. And maybe Carlin continues to wait a little bit for the right opportunity. Like I said, he's had chances to come up and go elsewhere. He's got a great opportunity in Gainesville right now. But one thing is pretty certain in my mind, and I'm sure you agree with this, is that teams are going to keep calling for him. The work he has done with not just Ruben Chinyelu, but give him a lot of credit for Thomas Houck and obviously Alex Condon being one of the better facilitators at the four in the country. He's someone who his pedigree, his ability to develop bigs, his coaching style, you know, in this day and age, I see people all the time say, "Oh, it's, you can't coach players so tough because of NIL and the transfer portal." Coaches are still are not going to change their style, and players are going to seek out being coached in a, you know, in a hard way. I'll just say it like that. Alex Condon is probably the player on Florida's roster who responds the best to being coached pretty aggressively. And yeah, Ruben is right there as well. I mean, Ruben's someone who, you know, you don't see him get angry with the coaching staff when he gets yelled at. He knows what he has to do. And they've set the level of expectation for him where he doesn't want to disappoint anyone on the roster because they've balanced coaching him hard with showing that they care about him. And I think Carlin's done a fantastic job of that. He's going to get a head coaching job sooner than later. So Florida fans, appreciate him while you got him, for sure.
Yeah, great point on Carlin, too, on the hard coaching. I think you and I both today, as we record here Monday before LSU Tuesday, we asked him about Hartman today, both Graham and myself. And, you know, he just talked about kind of his comfort level, to your point, the fact that Carlin is always himself. And then just kind of for fun, I asked him, like, what makes him more mad? Because I've seen Carlin lose his mind with Florida up 30 because, like, Tommy Houck buys a pump fake and leaves his feet. And have to actually get, like, restrained by Corey McCray from just going out on the court and ripping the player a new one. And it's your All-American, right? Like Tommy Houck. And he's like, "He left his feet, Corey." And it's like, it's okay, Carlin. What did Ruben say? I think he said everything bothers him. And then, you know, he said, "But I love that about him," which gives you kind of a sense of the relationship that he has with those players and how special this front court is, like, from a competitiveness standpoint. Like, they all respond to a coach who really demands perfection. I think in part because they kind of demand it from themselves. And, you know, as much as we talk about the improved guard play, and we're going to get to that, like, the front court has been, I mean, Alex Condon is the least talked about of these guys, and he's averaging 15, 9, and 5 or whatever it is. They're playing at such a high level, Graham.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, get a little, I guess you could even say, uncomfortable when anyone criticizes Alex Condon, because, you know, is he going to be perfect? No, no one out there is perfect, especially, and we've said this time and time again, you know, he's still relatively new to the game. He's improving, and his rate of improvement is already massive compared to where he was even, you know, 3 seasons ago. And this is such a balanced scoring team with Boogie and Xavier and Tommy and Ruben, obviously, and Alex. And then you have guys like Irby and Isaiah Brown who can get you 10 points plus off the bench every night. And obviously Handlocked and, you know, started his season with back-to-back double-doubles. Hasn't really had the scoring production that you would like to for him to. But with all that said, someone is going to be the odd man out. You know, outside of Tommy, no one's really regularly going for 20-plus points within this team right now. And just because someone, you know, only has a 12.8 rebound outing is not a sign that they played a bad game. It's just, it's matchups. It's how the flow of the game goes. And, you know, Alex Condon, like you said, has been a fantastic job at playing unselfish. He facilitates well. He passes along the baseline at a high rate. They play through him. I would have to, and we've talked about this, I would like to see a statistic of how many touches Alex Condon gets on, not just in the post, but on the perimeter in comparison to other fours in the country, I would imagine, without having the statistic in front of me, that he's probably top five in his usage as a passer as well. So someone who wears opponents down and does a great job passing, and to think that because he's not regularly getting 20 plus points, or he'll have an outing where he only has 12 or eight, whatever it is a sign that he's not effective for Florida, is a little bit of a lazy take to me. And it kind of makes me cringe a little bit when I hear people say that. This is the guy who was critical to Florida's success. You know, guys are going to get tired as the game goes on, and Condon, along with Chinyelu and Thomas Howe, do a great job at wearing the opposing front court down throughout games. And he's someone that, yeah, I see people say, oh, he should come back for his senior year. The guy is going to continue to get NBA interest after this season. Now, is he going to be a lottery pick? I don't think so. But I think this is someone who, you look at his skill set, he's going to continue improving as a shooter, his ability to kind of contribute in all facets of the game. He's great defensively. He affects shots. He's a great passer. He's improving as a ball handler. He can help you space the floor. Are his three-point numbers great? No, but you look at him as a screener. They need him from an analytical standpoint to be a threat off of pick-and-pop scenarios, because when you do that and the opposing teams have to close out on you from beyond the arc, you open up so much else on the floor, a baseline cut, and he's a great guy at passing it to someone like Thomas Hauck, who is cutting to the rim, and he throws a beautiful lob and gets the assist right there. So if he continues improving as a shooter and teams have to account for him, he's only going to continue to elevate his ceiling, which is already really impressive right now.
Yeah, and to your point, like, and that's what Fawcett and I talked about this on the last podcast about the return to senior year stuff. And to be clear, like, and I'm not saying you're talking about us, but like, I think the position we have is sort of, he could make $3.5 million if he comes back to Florida. So, you know, and Fawcett, I think, made this point, but it's not about basketball. Like, if he returned to Florida, it would be a long-term financial decision, because, you know, he's not as old as Tommy Hauck. Like, that's kind of the reality. Like, Hauck had that gap year. So, you know, with Alex, he's essentially, Hauck is essentially playing at a senior's age already, in addition to the fact that he's probably going to be a lottery pick. Condon, you're looking at like late second round projections to undrafted free agent projections. And wow, like, he's definitely good enough to play in the NBA. You know, he's not going to make the kind of money on a two-way that he, or even on a two-way that he could make if he came back to Florida. So I think he'll think about it. I really do. But the idea that he's come back and not been productive is something Todd Golden has put to the sword in press conferences, and I think we'll continue to. And that's kind of been the deal with Xavien Lee, is kind of shifting gears, is like, and I know it's easy to hear it and kind of roll your eyes because he's not making shots, but, you know, it's amazing how many times Graham or me were at these media availabilities and Todd's like, well, actually he's defending way better than we thought he would. He rebounds. He doesn't turn the ball, all these things that he's doing, and then, you know, goes out and gets 20-6 in one of the toughest environments in the sport.
Yeah, I get the harping on the three-point numbers. I really do. And it wouldn't have been as much of a point of focus if Boogie was shooting better, or Urban was giving you 3-4 threes a game, and Florida was still knocking down 9-10 shots. I mean, you could have lived with Xavien going 1-for-7 from three-point range, but the fact was, as a collective, Florida wasn't shooting well. And you're always going to put the blame on the guys in the backcourt, which is understandable, but everything else that he was doing was impressive in my mind along the way. I mean, obviously acclimating to a whole new team, a whole new league, a much tougher defensive league, obviously, than the Ivy League, and not to take a shot at the competition he faced at Princeton, but it was nowhere near what Florida played in non-conference play and in conference play. And teams were accounting for him at a higher rate. Like I said, playing with all new guys, expecting him to come in and be an instant impact type guy. In retrospect, not to get into revisionist history, but may have just been a little bit unrealistic. I mean, if you had asked any of them in the offseason, when would you like Xavien Lee to be playing at his best? They probably would have said, hey, we would like all of our guys to be playing at their best in February. So getting there in the middle of January, I don't think is a knock on him. Obviously, when you come to the defending national champions, you understand that you're going to have a different level of expectation where you're under the microscope for 40 minutes a night, and you're on a team that you're not going to necessarily be the primary scorer. I mean, this is a team that is going to play a ton through their front court. And Boogie Fland, obviously, is going to come in and try and get as many shots as you. So I think Xavien has done a great job at trying to find ways to continue being creative. He's a great rebounder. He's great at, you know, facilitating, getting out in transition. And his quickness, his ability to get to the rim, pick up contact, play unafraid of contact, and make these reverse layups that, you know, if he had made those plays 30 years ago, we'd be watching them on NBA TV highlight reels right now. But he just makes them look so normal. And it's not a shot at the, you know, the old era of basketball, but it does feel more and more routine. Like, we take it for granted when players are able to drive baseline, come under the rim, get in the air, elevate, draw contact, and make a one-handed layup with both hands. He makes that look routine. And it's really just been the three-point shooting that has been missing, which it kind of makes it so fascinating that people are looking at this Vanderbilt game and saying, okay, he's finally come along. Outside of the three-point shot, I think his game has been good most of the games this season. He's had a couple of games that, you know, he struggled a little bit, and the defense has gradually improved. And like you said, he's been a better defender than Florida expected. And when we talked to Xavien a couple of weeks ago, he pretty much, you know, defended himself and said, this is the best defense I've played of my entire career. So it was obviously far too early to hit the panic button for not just Florida as a team, but for Xavien's ability to positively impact this team this season.
Yeah, and for folks that, like, want, oh, I don't know how far they can go in March with this type of production. So even at his current level, the KenPom comparison for Xavien Lee right now is Marcus Paige, 2016. And that was North Carolina's point guard. And
I like
the
that.
Assists, yeah, the low assist numbers. Paige was shooting a little better from three at 33% to 28%. But high assists, low turnover, assist to turnover ratio is really good. Grabbing 5-6 rebounds for the Tar Heels a night, which is about where Xavien is. And, you know, Xavien's been pretty good, to Graham's point, at getting into the lane and the paint and using those Gortat seals that Florida sets so well to score, especially in SEC play. And I think Florida's needed, you know, those are rim twos. It's a program staple, something you could kind of take for granted with Walter Clayton last year, Florida getting those buckets from Xavien. The point is that North Carolina team went to the national final and lost on the famous Chris Jenkins shot. So, you know, if you tell me that Florida could have back-to-back years or they have one possession to win the national championship, you know, even if it went the other way, I think people would take it. And I'm not saying this Florida team gets that far at all. I'm just saying, I don't know, like, how much better they have to be. And it brings up an interesting point on, like, the Vanderbilt game, because, you know, I guess one way of looking at the Vanderbilt game, and we saw a lot of this from the salty Commodore Legion, was, well, Florida shot 10% over their averages. And it's kind of the other way to look at it is Florida really shot more along what their analytical projections suggested that they would be all year. And if Florida continues to do that, they're going to be awfully tough because, again, the front court is the front court. They're going to keep playing well. So, you know, I think that is worth noting. And then the other thing worth noting is, and this is a point that Graham has made, at tip-off club meetings and stuff, Florida looking for the eighth man, they seem to have found it in Isaiah Brown.
Yeah, Isaiah, a year ago, and this isn't a knock on him whatsoever, but, and I think he'd be the first to tell you, he was probably the most immature player on Florida's roster. I mean, he was a young guy, you know, 18, turning 19 with a veteran backcourt, and he didn't have to embrace this leadership role, and he didn't really have to be a defensive stopper. He played in, you know, for a team that really, he was often the most athletic one on the court. And then you get into college and that's no longer the case. And you have to find ways to alter your game and obviously learn team defense. It was an up and down year for him. Certainly he had a couple games where down the stretch he was impactful, but really the bar was elevated significantly in the off season, not just for his ability to try and be that eighth man for Florida, but then you bring in your older brother who is watching every single thing you do. And it, you know, not only do you not want to disappoint the coaching staff, but you don't want to disappoint family. And so for him, you know, into fall camp, it didn't really go as well as Florida's coaching staff had hoped and Isaiah had hoped. And he was in danger of losing out on that eighth man role to CJ Ingram. Has done a much better job in the past 3 months in honing in on the defensive end, asking, doing what they ask of him, you know, playing off of 2 feet, someone who communicates at a higher rate, is showing more maturity behind the scenes from what I understand. And if you get, I mean, if you get 14 points from him off the bench, you know, that is a bonus in my mind. I mean, they're happy with him coming in and playing 10 points and not scoring, not to use a cliche, as long as the score goes up in Florida's favor. So right, defense for him is going to be the focus all season long. He has great length. He has the ability to guard really 1 through 3, has some size in the low post as well, where he can help double guys on the block. And I do think that the combination of those facets, if he can get out and drive to the rim and finish with authority and knock down corner threes, that is kind of a bonus right now, as long as he is defending well. So to have an 8-man rotation that you feel really, really good about in this league is a luxury in my mind. I do think that for a long time, and correct me on this if I'm wrong, Florida was in the bottom half of teams, and they still may be close to that in bench minutes. I mean, they were below 33%, and
yeah,
there are some teams like Georgia, for example, that are above 40%, and people will always make the take, and I'm not saying it's lazy or wrong, but it doesn't always translate, that you need to have depth into March, especially as guys are playing 35 minutes a night and they are starting to feel it in their legs in February and into March, that you need an eighth man who in some of these contests can take it off of you. Not always a given, but when you have that, in my opinion, your ceiling goes up at a significant rate. And so if Isaiah can continue to play the way he is and Urban can come in and knock down open shots and keep playing physical and not be afraid of the level of competition, and then Micah can obviously come in and give you 20 good minutes a night,
right,
and just be able to, you know, stagger Ruben there and allow them to give some different looks in the front court, this team has an incredibly high ceiling, very similar to last season's team.
Yeah, what's fascinating to me, and you know, last possession of the Vanderbilt game, obviously you saw kind of the ability of Fland and Hauk as defenders, and just sort of the perfect switch, and then Hauk with the dig down that wasn't the same as like the Houston one, because that came on a sharp drive baseline, but certainly reminded a lot of people of that, just the way they tipped the ball out. And then Boogie, like, incredible discipline not to foul Tanner as he was going for the ball. Like, just Boogie kind of realizing that Tanner wasn't getting to that. So just pressuring just enough to make it even harder on Tyler. But outside of Boogie Fland, right now, the guy with Florida that has the biggest on-off defensive split, I mentioned it to Golden today at the presser, is Isaiah Brown. Like, Florida's defensive splits with him, you know, on the floor versus off the floor, pretty exceptional. Like, Florida they defend in the 98th percentile in the country. When he's on the floor, they defend in the 84th, still very good percentile in the country when he's off the floor. But that 14 percentage gap is actually bigger than Hauk's, which is 11, and only Fland's, which is 99th percentile to 74th, is different. So Boogie, you know, we've talked, he's, and Todd gets on him. He's had some games where he hasn't really been great defensively, actually. But I think the last few games he's become more consistent in every aspect, both offensively and defensively, Graham.
I think Boogie is a little bit prone to what Florida as a whole last year was at the beginning of games, where, you know, sometimes teams would come out and be up 9-2 early on, and then Florida would go on this run and chip back in and then blow it open in the second half. They're feeling teams out. They were feeling teams out at a good rate last year, seeing the looks they were getting on offense and defense. And I think Boogie is kind of the similar mold in a sense here, where the first 5 minutes of games, he's a little bit, you know, closer to average defensively, but then he's someone who, once he sees tendencies and the looks that the other team is getting, does a really, really good job. And this is kind of just, you know, generalizing it in a sense here, just trends and what we've seen. I'm sure there's more to it than that, but he does a really good job picking up on things as the game goes on. And that's part of the cliche of basketball IQ that people talk about, where, you know, you can't solely rely on a scouting plan and trying to memorize what every player does well and what to look for, because guys are going to adjust mid-game. And he does a good job throughout the game improving defensively once he sees what the opposition does. And obviously we talked about how active he is in passing lanes. He plays more physical than his size. This is someone very similar to Xavier that the coaching staff was so hesitant to even be critical of him in general, because, you know, to quote Ruben Chinyelu, or to quote Boogie, honestly, excuse me, you know, if you don't love the defensive side, you don't love the game of basketball. And obviously three-point shots are going to be inconsistent. You know, no one's knocking down more than 50% of their attempts, I believe, in three-point range, but you can control the effort you play with defensively. That is one of the things that is in your control. And so Boogie still was in, you know, not even just the good graces of Florida's coaching staff. He was still earning praise for how he obviously organized the offense, but the level of defensive intensity that he played with. And I know some people certainly take defense for granted, because Florida has been a good defensive team for the past year and a half, really. But you know this, and everyone who's watching the show knows this, but go back to Todd Golden's first 2 years in Gainesville. They were not a fantastic defensive team. And that has been an area where they have put more emphasis on in the last couple of years. And so when you see a guard, especially, that plays with the level of effort, whether it was Elijah Martin last year or Boogie Flan this year, it is more worthy of praise than the criticism of solely, you know, missing three-pointers is, in my mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, and again, I don't think, you know, I know it's a broken record, but I still continue to not believe that Florida's two guards are going to shoot in the 20s all year. Like, I think Lee will climb into the 30s. Maybe Boogie shoots in the 20s, but I bet it's high 20s, which right now at 21% would mean more makes. Like, I think those are going to come, and they're going to need nights like the other day where they shoot a little bit better from three if they're going to win the Southeastern Conference. It was cool to hear Todd Golden. I don't remember like him saying out loud that one of their goals was to win the SEC, but I think the cat was kind of out of the bag when Tommy Houck and Kondo were talking about it, but I'm glad they're talking about it out loud now. Because it's there for the taking, both because of the schedule and because of the talent that Florida has.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think there was still, if there was any disappointment from last season, it was not winning the SEC regular season, right? And they had chances, right? It was, correct me if I'm wrong, the Georgia loss really kind of eliminated their chance of winning the SEC.
Yeah. I mean, so as it turned out, because Auburn ended up losing a couple at the end, Florida essentially lost a share of the SEC title because of the Georgia loss.
Yeah. So losing it to your former head coach against a team that you shouldn't have lost to. Obviously, winning on the road is never easy, but Florida was really, really good away from home last year, obviously in non-conference play, but then only losing four games in SEC slate last year. You go 14-4 and you're facing, you know, teams that you haven't seen before, you know, in Texas, to be able to win on the road with the amount of teams, more than half of the SEC making the NCAA tournament, was incredibly impressive in my mind. So that was one of the few blemishes during the regular season last year. And you talk about goals for this team. The one that's missing now is an SEC regular season championship. And as you, I'm sure, have talked about, and we've talked about privately, the SEC is so wide open this season in comparison to years past. I mean, you don't really have a clear-cut favorite. I mean, there's no 2014 Kentucky or 2014 Florida team here in the mix that you're looking at and saying, okay, they're a juggernaut, they're 100% going to win it. It's the middle of January, and these next 5 weeks or so are going to be fascinating to watch because it really is going to be any team's race. We talked about this today. Yeah. Texas A&M is sitting here playing much better with an opportunity to win it. Vanderbilt, you were talking about this, you know, last Friday. This Florida Vanderbilt game may have been the two best SEC teams, and this could very well have dictated who wins the SEC. But Tennessee and Arkansas and Alabama and obviously Kentucky, if they keep playing the way that they have as of late, they're going to have something to say about that. And so a chance to win the SEC regular season is wide open for Florida. It would be another impressive feat for this team. And I think it would go a long way to getting one of those, you know, top 16 protected seeds, like you said. I mean, if you win the SEC, in my mind, you're a second seed at worst in this league in March Madness. So it's wide open for Florida. I understand why it would be a goal. And kind of to go back to last year a little bit, Todd Golden was pretty open at the end of February that their goal was to win the SEC. That he said that beating Auburn and closing games down the stretch, if some things fell their way, they had a chance to do it. So he did talk about it down the stretch last year, from what I recall. But to talk about it this early, it doesn't surprise me, given how much Florida has embraced internally the high level of expectation, even though it's a new team. They don't talk about, quote unquote, defending the national championship, but they understand that they have the ability to win the SEC regular season title this year. And putting that level of expectation on these guys, they've learned, is not going to hinder them. It's not going to make them, you know, get into a shell and be afraid of the moment. They're going to be motivated by an opportunity to do that. And I don't think they're worried about it impacting their on-court play whatsoever.
Yeah, I think that's great stuff. We're here with Graham Hall, 247 Sports. Going to talk about LSU now. Game previews brought to you by Game Time Sidekicks. Check out all their Yeti-like drinkware equipment. It is awesome. They have some sick national champion mugs. You're going to want to check those out over there at Game Time Sidekicks. But LSU is a fascinating team to me because, okay, so we Florida basketball got a media ballot this year. And I know at Media Days,
well-deserved.
We were one of the handful of ballots that had Vandy in the top five. So that was our first win. And maybe our biggest question mark right now is where we had LSU. We had them 11th. And before you're probably listening thinking, 11th, that's not good. But that's like bubble status for the SEC. Yeah. So we were higher on them than the rest of the league media because they were picked to finish 15th. So, you know, they lost Jalen Reed, who's their best player, to another injury. They have played three SEC games without DJ Thomas, who's a player Florida's very familiar with, having recruited him. That's their second best player. And yet they've still been competitive. And I think part of it is like they have really good positional size. And then they've got a bunch of guys that just know how to play that are winners. Max McKinnon and Aussie is shooting 43% from three. He's 6'6", so he's going to be a harder guard for Florida's backcourt than they've had to deal with. Markel Sutton was the Summit League Player of the Year, transferred from Omaha, went to the NCAA tournament with them. I think he just lit up Mizzou. So, you know, he's a guy that can play. Trying to think of who some of the other – Mike Nowaka's having an okay year, but I've really been impressed with Pablo Tamba in the few chances I've had to watch them. Another guy who played in the NCAA tournament, mid-major. Like, Matt McMahon went out and got, like, winners. LSU does not have very good basketball NIL. So shout-out to all the LSU people dropping in. I know you guys love to brag about your football NIL. You don't spend on men's basketball. I think you're probably 10th or 11th in basketball NIL, which given the fact that you're the only program of in the Power Five and in your entire state is a little embarrassing, but they don't spend it. They expect Matt McMahon to deliver anyway, and so far Matt hasn't been a magician, but I liked this roster build. They've been a little snake bit by injuries, but I think they'll compete with Florida. They're just a much more competitive unit than they were last year.
Yeah, LSU fans can speak to this obviously more than me, but I think the expectations for him are a little unreasonable given everything you just said from NIL, and obviously I don't know their revenue sharing numbers, but I would imagine that they probably devote a higher percentage of revenue sharing than most of the football programs in the SEC. You know, that number that was suggested by the NCAA was 70%. I would imagine that it's a little bit higher in Baton Rouge. And they probably also, combined with that, have more revenue sharing going to women's basketball and baseball than
right.
than maybe any other program in the SEC. So the combination of those three leaves Matt McMahon's program a little under budgeted, I guess. And you're going to have to rely then on your evaluations and getting guys to exceed projections and maybe even take less to go to Baton Rouge than they would maybe going to another program because they have a chance to come to the SEC and play for a program with an avid fan base. But he obviously has done a good job landing talent. You know, it's unfortunate what happened to Reed. And yeah, Deaton Thomas is someone, I think he's missed 5 games now. Cause he hasn't played an SEC play at all, right? He's been in the walking boot.
He might've played the first SEC game.
Okay. But it's been 2 weeks without him and he's averaging what, 17 points a game.
And you're right. He did not. Sorry. Yeah,
so he hasn't. No, he hasn't. I get the. And I asked Todd about this today. The 4-game losing streak that they were on is not indicative of their ceiling. This is certainly a team that has some interesting stuff that they can throw at you offensively. You know, I thought it was kind of fascinating the other night that we saw Florida use a little bit of zone. Maybe some of the problems that LSU can present to you offensively could make that a factor. I'm not talking more than 2 minutes, but this is a team that, especially if Thomas is back, they have scores. You know, Thomas went to UNLV, obviously a little bit undersized, but he's a bucket man, and you know this. And this is someone that, even if he's not 100% tomorrow night, this is someone who can go out and get you 15-plus points a game. And really, Florida hasn't had too many players in the backcourt go off against them this season. So it hasn't been something that they've had to account for too much. And as a result, if they won the battle in the front court, they have been more often or not going to be a team that wins by double digits. But, you know, go back to the last couple of weeks, Kareem Thomas at Dartmouth held in check, you know, a guy who was shooting over 50% from three. Jeremiah Wilkinson held in check, played less than 20 minutes for Georgia. Florida has done a good job against guards and taking them out of contest, but they can't slack off on Thomas if he's back tomorrow night. We're going to find out here, you know, in a couple hours what the availability report is for the SEC. I love that we get availability reports now because it used to be just guessing a little bit here where we'd be like, all right, 90 minutes before tip-off, let's see who's out there, see if they're ready to go. We'll have a better idea if Thomas is going to be out there tomorrow night when we see, and maybe he's listed as questionable, maybe he's probable, who knows. This is someone who I think Coach McMahon described him recently as day-to-day in the build-up to this contest. So a little bit of an unknown to account for, and him not being out there is a reason why they've struggled so far in SEC play. But they've had other guys step up. You know, coaches will always tell you when they try and think optimistically about injuries, you rarely see a coach come out there and be like, yeah, we're missing our leading scorer, we're screwed, our other guys don't have the chance to do it. They're not going to say that. They're going to say this is an opportunity for other guys to showcase what they can do, to play more of an elevated scoring role. And then when you get your leading scorer back, you're going to have guys around him playing with more confidence. So there's always a bright side to this where you now have 3-4 players around Thomas who have played a larger role as of late. And if he comes back in the equation, they could be a dangerous team that should not be written off. Even if, I'll say this to bring me full circle, even if LSU fans have already kind of written off Matt McMahon, and I'm not saying anything that they don't know. I mean, there was heat for him a year ago in SEC play, and maybe that was compounded by the whole Todd Golden connection, considering they faced off against each other in the NCAA.
Right.
And Florida ends up landing Golden, and maybe LSU was sitting there being like, well, maybe if Todd Golden, you know, had won that game and advances in the NCAA tournament, Florida hires Matt McMahon, and then we get a shot at Todd Golden. That's a, you know, a fair what-if scenario. I don't blame him for that. But if that is adding into the level of expectation, what they need to realize is that Florida, from an NIL standpoint and a fundraising standpoint, have provided Todd Golden with the majority of what he is looking for,
right,
in funds to build the roster that has now won a national championship and is in the driver's seat to win the SEC regular season title.
Yeah, I mean, Florida's a better job. I mean, let's just say the quiet part out loud.
You have championship pedigree.
And by the way, it was okay for us to do this in football too. I spent, before you hopped on, I was saying, hey, man, I know you guys, a lot of you all know Graham because you read his football stuff too. And like, you know, maybe my listeners read my football stuff, but that's about it. So like, but you know, like I did a lot of radio during the job search, like all of us. And I mean, it's our job to be honest. And LSU is a better football job.
Yeah. I think Florida fans obviously want to hinge on the, you know, two national championships and the public education, right, being top five university. And I get that, but they are farther away from being a competitive team right now on the national landscape than LSU is. And I think you could even make the case that LSU baseball, I think, is an easy case to make, that LSU baseball is a better job right now.
So I think so too.
Two of the three top jobs in major college sports are at LSU over Florida, but basketball is clearly not there in comparison to Florida.
And it used to be that New Orleans, you know, because you could recruit New Orleans and you're LSU, that's great. You're going to get some players from there. But now high school basketball in Florida, you know, there's much more than New Orleans. There's more talent in Fort Lauderdale and Miami than there is coming out of New Orleans. And, you know, Todd Golden, about the only place he's high school recruited has been in state, which is a little tip he got from Billy Donovan, which was kind of, hey, you can build really good rosters by getting guys to not leave. And, you know, guys that want to be Gators are going to be around. I think Florida's future is pretty bright there as well. But, yeah, I mean, Florida's giving more of their revenue share to basketball, as they should, because they've won multiple national championships in the sport. This stuff isn't complicated. It's just a better job. I think Matt McMahon's in a hard job. Maybe hard is a little harsh, but I would put it in the middle of the pack of SEC basketball jobs, whereas Florida is number two pretty clearly. Maybe you could convince me, maybe if I saw the rev share numbers at Arkansas, that it's a better job than Florida. Maybe. But I'd need to see those rev share numbers, and there need to be a pretty big disparity. The point I'm making is, I think Graham and I are in agreement. Like, this stuff about Matt McMahon, like, let's assume that even if LSU has $50 million plus to pay Brian Kelly, $800 billion to pay Lane Kiffin or whatever they're paying him, whatever they pay the baseball coach, whatever NIL they pay baseball, like, there's not enough children's hospitals to pay Matt McMahon's buyout and hire the person that they want. I think they got to let him work. They're kind of stuck. And that's even before you talk about women's basketball, which they also spend on. There is not an endless flow of money there. And I don't know if, like, anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think their thought is, we'll go and pay for someone. And the problem with that is, like, someone would have to want the job really bad. And I don't know who that is, because it's not a great SEC job. I do think that their team is decent. And I mean, they have an eye-opening win over SMU when DJ Thomas was available. I think SMU is a team that's probably around a 32 good. Robert Miller is a good front court player. Like, Florida needs, the biggest fear for Florida fans should be that you know, the front court guys know that they have to bring it, but like, where Boogie and Xavier and headspace wise heading into this game tomorrow? I think Auburn, national television, 4 p.m. weekend game, Florida will have, Todd will have his team's attention. Tomorrow night's kind of the question. So we'll see. Now, it hasn't been like a Todd Golden team to lay an egg at home. Obviously, they've lost, what, two home games, Graham, in the last 2 years by a combined 3 points.
Yeah.
So they'll probably show up, but they'll need to, because LSU's better than their record.
Yeah, they are. And Florida has been so good at home, and obviously give the fans some credit for that. The fan base is renewed since the Mike White era. The energy is back in the building. Students are back on campus. This is an atmosphere that I think is really conducive to Florida having a ton of success tomorrow night. But yeah, they have to show up. They can't just sit there and look towards the Auburn game. And I don't think they will whatsoever. If anyone is going to be looking more forward to the Auburn game, it's probably going to be Todd Golden. I don't think it's going to impact his coaching job.
Right. Yeah.
He's going to be seeing his best friend, Stephen Burrell, on Saturday. You know, I wonder if they're going to try and host him for dinner Friday night. But I think that this team is going to show up. And if Thomas is not at his best, if he's not pulling a Missouri, who was the guy from Missouri last year that hit six threes or something against Florida in that game last year?
Caleb Grill.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't go, you know, unconscious from 3-point land, this is a Florida team that, you know, has the size. They have the advantage in the front court. They have guards playing at a high level right now. I think that the edge is palpable in this game, but this is a team that can't afford to look over anyone the rest of the way. And given that, you know, they rode a 12 game win streak through the end of last season, started strong, just, you know, with a strong schedule, started with a strong schedule this year, and realized that they're going to face so many talented teams in non-conference play. They know that every single game is going to be a battle outside those three bye games to end non-conference play. So I don't really have a concern about that whatsoever. But in the SEC, there's enough talent here that you can get snake bit on any given night by someone who just shows up. I mean, maybe they have a, what was it, Kirill Porzingis type performance from someone that, you know, like the Oklahoma guy who had knocked down four threes. And Todd Golden said after the game that, you know, we watched his film from when he was in Europe. I don't think he ever made that many when he was overseas. Yeah. You know, you can have someone who can just get you one night, and that happens. But what you can control is competing for 40 minutes. And with guys like Tommy and Boogie and Ruben, obviously, and Alex Condon, I don't have any concern about their motivation to go out and beat LSU. And I know fans, considering how things have gone between Florida and LSU and just about every other sport except for basketball, are going to be up for this one. But remind me, didn't LSU and Florida, that was a pretty close game last year that Florida had to rally on the road in Baton Rouge. So
yeah, it was a weird one, because
assuming, you know, we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, Florida had Condon and Elijah Martin out.
That's right.
It ended up being it was a Ruben Chenular game. It's like they ended up feeding the post in the second half, and LSU kind of had not a lot of answers in the front court. Robert Miller, the freshman, was kind of their lone front court answer. And then here it was, Matt McMahon thought he rebuilt his front court, and then Jalen Reed gets hurt. So he's been a little snake bit. Fawcett called him the new Mike White, in terms of, like, it seems like every time he has a good team, his best player gets injured.
You know, I was going to use that. The Mike White formula is I think more applicable in more ways than just that, because if LSU fans want to find a way to get out of Matt McMahon, get another program, probably a mid-major, to come and hire him, so you aren't paying that, what, $20+ million buyout. And then maybe you can go, you know, get someone like Bucky, like Texas A&M did when, you know, Buzz heads to Maryland. Maybe you can go get a young guy who is on the come up there and get out from under him. But buying him out after everything that's been invested in football right now just doesn't seem feasible. And so you got to hope that he strings together some wins and some some group of five team, some mid-major team comes along and says, okay, we actually want this guy, and he realizes that his time at LSU has run its course and he's going to leave. That seems like the way out for me right now for them, without knowing every particular their situations.
Yeah, that's a great shout. And that the funny thing is, like, the hot mid-major hires right now, like Phil Martelli Jr., that's not a personality or cultural fit. Like, there are all kinds of, you know, he's at VCU. The point is, there aren't a lot of easy answers for them right now. You know, Will Wade was hiding out at McNeese State. Well, now he's at NC State, and they're not going to let him go back to LSU. You know, normally you say you can't go home again, but at LSU, I don't think they would care. They just have shown that, you know, they will hire who they need to hire and worry about the rest later.
Yeah, and what Will Wade was doing is pretty normalized now, right? I mean,
totally. You know,
he's all is forgiven. So
absolutely. I mean, yeah, like guys like Jay Luke. I heard Jay Lucas on an LSU talk show, and I thought Miami has way more basketball NIL than you, but go off. And you know, like these are the types of kind of fantasy worlds. And I think people just associate, oh, LSU has all this football and money for sports. They must be spending on men's hoops. And they're just not, they are competitive, but they're not in the top tier in the SEC in that. And until that happens, you know, I don't know where you get something better than Matt McMahon. If you're around Gainesville, go to GatorTipOffClub.com. Check it out. Make sure that you consider joining. It's pretty cheap. You get your catered meal before basically every home game. There are guest speakers from Scott Strickland to, you know, Jenny Rowland to our usual pregame guy, Graham Hall, breaking down games. So make sure you come out. Graham, we'll see you at the Tip-Off Club tomorrow. Tell everybody where they can find you. I already did all that, but I want just make sure you can tease what's going on 247 and all that.
Hey man, I love talking hoops with you anytime we get a chance to do it. Most of our conversations happen behind the scenes, but I love being able to talk publicly to let everyone know how we feel about not just this team, but the state of college basketball from the SEC to the mid majors who can make a run this year. You can find my work over at Swamp 247. We're running a 50% off promo right now. Actually, the new one starts tomorrow through February 5th. If you want to try us out, you can get 2 months for $1. Come join our community. We do live updates of basketball games. You can come on our message board and post your thoughts. Although sometimes, you know, I got to warn you, if they don't agree with it, they may let you know. So that's the internet. But ton of stuff over at Swamp 247, recruiting, basketball. I'm sure we're going to do this again soon because it's an exciting season. We always have something to talk about here. And everyone who listens knows that Neil does a fantastic job. Subscribing to the Patreon is well worth it. He asks insightful questions. He asks the most insightful questions of anyone at the press conferences, always analytical based in a profession that sometimes can too often inject their opinion to the professionals that they are asking. Neil always comes correct with facts. So you all are spoiled and blessed, frankly, to be able to listen to him. And of course, Eric crushes it. I haven't talked to Eric in a minute. We got to catch back up. He is a busier man than me, and maybe a little bit busier than Neil, even though Neil has multiple jobs from being a dad, an attorney, and bringing you all this fantastic coverage and his fantastic writing over at Saturday Down South. So we'll have to do this again soon, man. It is always a pleasure. Anyone, you can reach out to me on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, at Graham Hall, and we got to do it again soon. I keep saying that. It just sometimes feels too few and far between episodes. So I'm sure we'll be talking again soon as the season kind of gets even more and more exciting.
Yeah, man, I hope so. And I don't know, maybe one of these days we'll, I don't know, before a game, we'll sit down and break down the new All-Star game format too. I know we'll see your boy Donovan Mitchell there. So,
you know, I've got a TV right here to my left. I've been trying not to look at it, but my Cavs right now are playing OKC, an OKC team without Jalen Williams. But it's so funny, they just, you know, inserted another Jalen Williams, the former Arkansas standout, as everyone remembers, who now is a lethal three-point shooter right into the roster. And I think they're up at halftime right now. So I'm going
to
enjoy
that.
Get
to that.
No, it's been fantastic. You know, second half is going to be electric as well. And obviously the national championship, I know Florida fans are certainly hoping that Miami does not win tonight because they'll be a little insufferable more so than they already are, I'll be honest. So fantastic day of sports, and looking forward to a great game tomorrow night against the LSU Tigers.
All right, guys. Graham Hall, thanks, buddy.
My pleasure. Y'all take care.
And so that's it. We will be back tomorrow on the Patreon, patreon.com/FloridaBBHour, to talk post-game stuff. We'll preview Auburn on the Patreon as well. But hope you guys enjoyed this podcast, kind of breaking down where Florida is after the big win over Vanderbilt. Lots of Patreon content on that W as well. Patreon.com/FloridaBBHour remains the best way to support the show. Appreciate you guys. You know, hanging in there when we had a little break between the normal podcast. Thanks to our sponsors at Game Time Sidekicks. We are Florida Basketball Hour. Fawcett will be back soon. Go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts.